God, the beneficent, the merciful, the creator and the sustainer of the universe, peace and blessings upon his servant and messenger Muhammad forever. Amin. I bear witness that there is no God worthy of worship except the one true God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the messenger and servant of God. As is my fashion, I greet you with a greeting that is common among Muslims around the world. It's a universal greeting of peace. It's a greeting that has been used by all of the prophets, from Abraham through to Prophet Muhammad. May peace be upon them all. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be unto you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we have our 34th program in our series dealing with the social system of Islam. We'll be continuing our discussion of the topic of polygamy in Islamic law. This is our fourth program dealing with the subject. I have joining me on the program as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum. Could I ask you to very quickly highlight the main points that we commented on in our third program in this topic dealing with polygamy?
Sure. We continued in the last program discussion of the meaning of justice, which is a prerequisite for permitting polygamy. We also discussed the fact that Islam, for the first time in its own scriptures and among all world scriptures, specified the maximum number of wives to be taken under any circumstances, which is a step much forward than what was common, having an unrestricted number of wives in the past. The main part of the program, however, dealt with some analysis of some of the possible reasons why polygamy was permitted in Islam, starting all the way from divine wisdom, who allowed that to in scriptures of various religions even before Islam. There must be some good reason. Secondly, something pertaining to Islam in particular as a universal message to all people in all times and places where there might be different cultural needs, social problems, and individual problems, and that Islam proposes practical and wholesome solution to all of these rather than just talk about idealistic things that does not exist in the world of humans. More specifically, we talked a little bit about some of the collective reasons which may make polygamy a more wholesome and compassionate solution, the case of low sex ratio as a result of wars or more fatality among men, depending on the circumstances. And we started dealing briefly towards the end of the program with some of the individual cases, such as incurable diseases or a wife who might be confined for years into a mental hospital, for example, where any other alternative other than polygamy would be cruel because it involves either divorcing a sick wife who is really in bad need of support during her suffering, which might extend for years, or to encourage the husband to go from back door to satisfy his needs. So still polygamy would be a morally superior solution in extenuating circumstances such as these.
Mm-hmm. Well, now in our last program, we ran out of time as you were expanding on some of the individual cases which might help us to understand this issue a little bit further. I wonder if perhaps I could ask you to continue with some further discussion of that.
Some additional examples.
Some additional examples of individual cases, yes.
Well, a common example also is the case of barrenness. Of course, barrenness, as you know, could be from the man's side or from the wife's side. It could be from either. But suppose there is a case of barrenness on the woman's side has been shown or proved, and the woman doesn't bear any children. Now, it is quite natural and human instinctive need for a human, for man and woman for that matter, to want to have children of their own. Now, what could a person like that do in his early life? He wishes to have children of his own, but that's not possible with his first wife. Should he be expected to suffer for the rest of his life? Or should he divorce his wife, whom he may love so dearly? Of course, some people might say, which is quite possible, a possible solution, why can't he adopt? Islam does not allow adoption in the Western sense, but allows
yes.
fostering.
Yes.
Okay, to take a child and look after him. Well, that could be possible. And if that satisfies his needs and his wife's needs, that's fine. I mean, there is no objection. But on the other hand, there are some people also who instinctively wish to have children of their own, you know. And one would not expect them to suffer for the rest of their lives. In a case like that, taking a second wife may be, in some cases, again, a more morally superior and more compassionate solution than divorcing his wife or just going through this torture. There are other similar cases. I could only hint at one. There may be some individuals who have different dispositions. You know, God created people with different energies and feelings. And it doesn't need much stretch of imagination to know that there may be some exceptional cases where a person might have a sort of overpowering urge, which might not necessarily be consistent with the predisposition of his wife. In some cases like this, rare as it may be, the only other alternative for that person would be to really push him, if he's not too pious, to commit acts of adultery outside of the marital bonds. Well, Islam deals with the problem more honestly and face to face. You say, all right, if such exceptional case even exists, it is more moral and better to have things in the open, to have relationships which are protected legally, which are natural, instinctive, marital relationship, than to encourage this kind of backdoor type of solution to the problem. So there could be a variety of situations like that, not necessarily that it happens every second or for every person or every place, but it does occur once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, so far in our discussion, we've been discussing this issue of polygamy predominantly from the male perspective. I wonder if perhaps we might be able to look at the other side of the coin now, from the female side, and perhaps start with the situation of the second wife in a polygamous situation. What options are available to her?
I mean, why should she accept something like that or
a
relationship like that? Well, just to make a cross-reference, in a previous program about the rules of marriage in Islam, it was indicated that the acceptance or consent of both parties is a prerequisite for the legality of marital relationship. We talked about cases where if a woman does not agree and she's forced into a given marriage, it could be nullified. We have given several examples of that. So it must be by agreement on her own free will to accept a situation like that. That means then that a woman, a second wife, if you will, is not forced or cannot be forced and should not be forced actually into a relationship with a man who's already married to another wife, assuming again that's accepted as a legal marriage. She has to voluntarily choose that and agree to it. Now, if we put emotions and social orientation aside, which might vary from one place to the other, and try to look at it perhaps on a more honest and objective way, it should not be too difficult to point out to certain cases where, for the second wife, this is a good solution. Example. Suppose you have a widow or divorcee who may have, let's say, three children. Now, her chances for marriage may not be really that great. I mean, to get married to one person as his own and single wife, it happens, but it may not be as attractive, and her chances might be greatly reduced. Now, in a case like this, a woman may find out that it is better for her to experience the warmth of marital relationship, to have some male around, even a stepfather for her children, to help in upbringing of those children. And she may decide that that position, her position as a second wife, is still better than loneliness and having to struggle alone in life for times to come, because she can't help it. She's either divorcee or widowed. There may be other cases where the woman is not necessarily in that particular position, but in a case of low sex ratio where youth are not particularly interested in getting married. Again, the only other alternative before her would be to spend her life as so-called spinster without having the experience of marital relationship. Or if you know, that extends for too long, she may be tempted to break moral laws in order to satisfy her needs, whether physical or emotional also. That's another important part of it. Now, in a case like that, again, she may decide that it is better for her to get married even as a second wife rather than to remain single for the rest of her life. These examples that I just gave, these two examples, are not theoretical. If we really open our eyes and look around us, even in our own neighborhoods, we might find that there may be some cases like this where a great deal of suffering and deprivation is taking place, which most often lead also to breaking of moral laws. Well, in situations like that, Islam offers a solution. Instead of saying, suffer for the rest of your life, or no, you can't do it and force the individual to violate moral laws, it provides a clean and practical solution for cases like that. But again, it's a matter of acceptance.
Well, now, what about the situation of the first wife? Is it necessary that she consent to the husband taking a second wife? What kinds of options and protections are open to her as the first wife?
We cannot say that as a broad, blank principle that the approval or agreement of the first wife to her husband taking a second wife is an absolute prerequisite for taking a second wife. We cannot really put it that way. But we can say also that within the spirit of Islam and the spirit of Islamic law in general, it is only appropriate to have some discussion and consultation with the first wife. Of course, there will be lots of problems and objections, but it is not regarded really as a good character on the part of the person to get married to a second wife in secret, or to simply surprise his first wife after the decision is taken. This is not really a very appropriate or decent act to be taken. We're not talking strictly in terms of legality, but appropriateness. It is, however, possible that the first wife may have what amount to a veto right on her husband taking a second wife. In Islamic law, at the time of marriage, if the first wife, or the wife at that time, specify in the marriage contract that her husband shall not take a second wife, many jurists say that this condition is enforceable and it would be binding on the husband to follow. How they explained it, the various school of jurisprudence differed about the explanation, but not the principle. For example, in the Hanbali school of jurisprudence, they say that marriage could be invalidated if he takes a second wife on the basis of violation or breaking of the marriage contract. That's their basis. In other schools like Maliki school of jurisprudence, they said she could nullify the marriage or ask for nullification of marriage, not on the basis of breaking the contract, but because of harm, darar, which is one aspect of Islamic law, that some harm was inflicted upon her because of his violation of that contractual commitment or agreement, which basically say again that he can veto. Or you might call it again like no fault type of divorce on her part. Now, there is also another form of protection for the first wife, which again amount to basically a veto right on polygamy. And this is called isma in Arabic, which is translated in English more or less like delegated repudiation. Delegated repudiation, which simply means that a woman at the time of marriage may specify in the contract that she would have the unilateral right to divorce her husband. See, just like the husband may have the unilateral right, she also may have the unilateral right to divorce her husband. In which case, if the husband takes a second wife and she doesn't feel happy with this, she's authorized, according to that clause, to divorce her husband unilaterally. So these are various forms where, at the time of first marriage, could be specified and provide protection also for the first wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what about the circumstance where the marriage contract did not place any restrictions on on polygamy? Does the wife still have the right, unilateral right to divorce?
Well, that's an interesting question. Many times when I invited to give lectures and talks about various aspects of family in Islam, and when I mentioned these protections that I discussed in the previous question, some of the sisters said, "Oh, I wish I've known that, you know." You know, if I were aware of that only at the time of marriage, but what can I do now? I think it's a legitimate question. No, it doesn't mean that there is no protection, even if it's not specified. Because in Islamic law, a woman is also entitled to seek divorce for good reason, good cause. For example, if the woman can show that her husband's taking of a second wife was really not only unnecessary but caused her, that's the main thing, caused her harm or injustice, which is against the permission to give polygamy. We mentioned before that polygamy is preconditioned by certain conditions, one of which of course is the justice, absolute justice. There is no first wife or primary wife and second wife. They have to be all in equal footing, on equal footing. She can go to the judge and she may ask also for divorce. This is another way out of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, now what happens in the event that the judge is not convinced that there is any real harm that has been done? Is there any other option that she can fall back on?
Well, even then there is still a way out. In Islamic law there is a system which is not known in the West, which is quite interesting. It's called khula, which means that even if there is no fault on the part of the husband, it applies to polygamy or other cases even. There is no fault in the husband. He's supporting his family. He's not committing any injustice. Like you said, the judge could not find any fault with him except that he simply needed for some reason or the other to have a second wife.
Mm-hmm.
The first wife who's not happy with this can simply make a kind of agreement with the husband to pay him some financial compensation in return for getting out of this marital relationship. That compensation is usually in the form of returning back whatever marriage gift or mahr, or sadaqah as the Islamic term actually, was given to her at the time of marriage, or any other property that he gave her because of the marital relationship. So justice demand that if she wants to get out on her own, then at least he should get back this kind of thing that he gave, with the understanding that it would be a lasting marital relationship. So she can apply that option if she feels, again, that it is against her interest to continue as his wife. But she still, of course, has the other option that if she feels that it's still comparatively better for her to remain as his wife, she may do so. So there are protections, yeah, even in that case, yeah.
Sort of a supplementary to that, and the husband is obligated then to, if the wife wishes to get out of the marriage, he's then obligated, if she offers to make this payment, to accept?
Oh, yes, yes. In Islamic law, he cannot refuse, and this subject is an interesting one, because like I said, it would be new for many of the Western viewers and audience. But when we touch on the topic on the solution of marriage, marital problems and divorce, we can discuss that further. But I can say at this juncture, yes, you're right. The husband has no right to refuse, but they have to work out whatever, you know, financial agreement. But in principle, he cannot refuse. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm sure as we've gone through the previous four programs in the series, many people who have been watching the program probably have asked themselves, what about the plurality of husbands? We've talked about the plurality of wives.
Right.
What about polyandry, I think it is.
Polyandry. Yeah.
Polyandry. What about the situation of polyandry? Is why not have the plurality of husbands?
Well, we can look at that, first of all, in terms of Islamic law, whether that's permissible or not, first, as a basic statement. Then we can look at it historically and analytically, in order to put the picture together. To start with, by way of a statement, polyandry, or having more than one husband for the same wife, is not permissible in Islamic law under any circumstances. I have to be honest and clear in stating that. In fact, when you go back to the Quran, in the verses which mentioned or alluded to polygamy, more particularly chapter 4, verses 3 and 129, it says, فَانْكِحُوا مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ marry of women of your choice. It didn't say men or women, and the Quran is very delicate and very accurate in its expression. So that rules out this notion of polyandry, because it is only the female gender that was used. But again, aside from the fact that there's absolutely no difference among jurists that polyandry is not permissible in Islam, if you look at it historically speaking, and that might be illuminating, and when I say historically, I'm not talking about the history of Muslims in just 1400 years, I'm talking about the history of the world in general, I think you will find that the incidence of polyandry, more than one husband to the woman, has been very, very real. I'm not saying non-existent. It did exist. It may still exist even in some rare cases. But it has been comparatively very, very rare as compared with the occurrence of polygyny, or one husband having more than one wife. And we've seen before that even Israelite prophets in various religions in their early stage of development, including Judaism and Christianity, as well as Islam, did permit, in the case of Islam, still does permit polygyny. See, now when you try to explain why was this more common in almost all civilizations, religions in different parts of the world, perhaps some analytical questions may be useful. First of all, biologically speaking, biologically a woman gets pregnant only once, see, whereas a man may have several infants from his progeny at the same time if he has more than one wife. Now, it is well known that in all cultures, everywhere, everybody agrees that every child is entitled to know his lineage, to know who his mother is and who his father is. There might be some exceptions to that, but I mean, it's almost universally accepted that this is something that any human being would love to know and determine with a great deal of certainty. Now, let's take the assumption for the sake of argument that a woman is married to more than one husband and she gets pregnant. Now, whose child is that? When that child is born, well, his mother would be known, of course, because there's only one mother,
yes,
who can bear him. But who his father is, if she's married to three husbands? You know, and this is a very difficult question, you know, and there's no practical really solution to that if you look at it even purely from the biological point of view. Secondly, you can have also another social aspect of it. Of course, when we say social, we have to be cognizant that this may vary from culture to culture and place to place, but on the whole, it is not unreasonable generalization to say that, generally speaking, the male side is the head of the family, mm-hmm. generally speaking, including even in contemporary world. Not in the terms of dictators, as we'll discuss later on, but still, he holds some kind of leadership of the family. Now, if a woman is married to more than one husband, who is the boss?
Mm.
You know, it leads to a situation where, again, considering man's or male's comparatively aggressive, and you call it even dominant, or dominating nature, God created him like that. That there will be blood on the floor. You know, you can't imagine the situation where two husbands are competing for the same wife, especially if in the same household. It becomes a very unpleasant type of thing. But in addition to this biological and social aspects, I think there's something more important than that, which is basically innate and psychological aspect of it. You see, for a woman, the matter of sex is much deeper than that in the male side. I'm not saying that male also doesn't have any feeling in the matter of sex, but you're saying, comparatively speaking, the instinctive nature of woman is that sex is tied very much not just with the physical aspect, but with emotions and feelings, much more so than the male side. It follows from this that her feelings normally tend to concentrate in one particular person. And I'm talking, of course, about a natural, healthy female whose mind and values are not polluted by a promiscuous situation or rampant, loose sexual morality in society. I'm talking about if the person is upbrought in a normal, virtuous type of situation. It's always focused on one man. And I'm not talking again in terms of theory. I've talked to many, you know, females on the same issue. And I asked that question, can you imagine or perceive of yourself being a wife of more than one man? And it's almost universal answer that, you know, it's just unbelievable. Of course, still, imagining herself being a second wife for the same man, or first wife for a man who has more than one wife, is still also, you know, not as pleasant, but the comparative degree is quite different. And that's why we find some scholars actually say that woman by nature is comparatively much more monogamous in her attitude, whereas man has some elements of polygamous tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, we only have a few minutes left in today's program. I'd like to ask you about the situation where the husband is barren or chronically ill. What can a woman do if she's not permitted to have more than one husband, as we've just been discussing?
You mean why not consider a multiplicity of husbands?
Yes.
A better solution than divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if a woman faces a problem like that, similar to the problem of man, she has the various options that we have discussed before. I'll summarize them again. But I think we have to keep in mind that considering some of the negative aspects of polyandry, or having more than one husband, which makes it rather impossible really to have an orderly society when this is practiced on any scale, really, still the woman is not forced into that situation at all. You say, all right, if she wanted to be kind and compassionate, well, it doesn't mean that she can marry another husband and look after her sick first husband. We have seen that this probably won't work. If she's really sacrificing and she wishes for the sake of God or whatever other noble motive she may have to look after her husband and her children, she may do so. I mean, nobody forbids her from doing this. If, on the other hand, she chooses to terminate this marital relationship, then she can use the same measures that were described before in a case like that. So in other words, these measures we talked about in the case the husband wants to take a second wife, she doesn't agree. But now we're talking about a wife whose husband is chronically ill or is confined to a mental hospital or whatever, and she does not wish to just live like that. She can apply the same measures, can use them here. She can go to the judge and ask for divorce, and of course that would be a very justifiable reason. She can use her delegated repudiation or asma, if that was specified in the contract, or suspended repudiation, that is at the time of contract. She may also preserve certain rights or conditions, or she can ask for khula, returning back his, you know, property that he gave to her in return for nullifying the marriage. So what we're saying here is that it is not exactly like some people might believe, it's just the exact other side of the coin, because God created male and female also with some different disposition. They are equitable and equal in the human, basic human or spiritual structure, but not necessarily in every aspect of their lives and their nature. So the solution is there, but it is an equitable solution rather than simply a superficial mathematical equality. But just one final quick comment, that this solution or options are more even than the options found even in Western laws.
Okay, well, at that we'll have to leave because we've exhausted our time. We want to thank you for watching. Invite you back next week. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
Thank you.